Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Inner Voice Intuitive Hour with your host, Jenny Seek.
Hi, folks. This is Jenny Seek, and this is your weekly forum for connecting with your intuitive process, all things metaphysical, and honoring and recognizing your soul self. Thanks for tuning in, and enjoy the ride.
Hi there, everybody. Thanks for listening to Inner Voice Intuitive Hour this evening. So glad you chose to spend the hour with us. This is a show for folks who are interested in the intersection between depth psychology, which has to do with understanding your unconscious and understanding the archetypes or stories that show up in your life, and connecting with your intuition on a greater level and trusting how your inner voice speaks to you. The show, sometimes I do shows that are in-house where I just share a topic, and sometimes I have guests who have followed their inner voice and talk about what that journey looks like, and other times I have folks who are practitioners in metaphysics or in intuitive awareness. So tonight, I have someone who does two of those things, who has followed their inner voice pretty clearly and also is connected pretty deeply with their intuition and shares their intuitive gifts with the rest of the world. So I'm so excited to have Panta Bosniak tonight, who is an author and a minister on, and she's going to tell us all about what she does. Are you there, Panta?
I am. Thanks so much.
Awesome. Oh, absolutely. Happy to have you. Thanks for accepting the invitation this evening.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool. So I know that you are a published author and that you've written books. You wrote a book about dealing with cancer. And then mm-hmm. I know you also wrote a book about abundance triggers. And I know that recently you just wrote a book about a poetry book. Of love poetry. So I want you to have a chance to share all of those titles and what your vision was for those projects.
Well, thanks. I would actually say that the third item that you mentioned, the archetypes, I would say mm-hmm. we really share that too. And there is a kind of inner... Well, really two inner archetypes in love poems and in my next book called Awaken Love, next Ooh. Book of love poetry, very much on the same theme. And I would say that those two inner archetypes are the inner mate mm-hmm. and the beloved, which mm-hmm. which really overlap. And maybe even a third archetype, which is kind of a biggie, which is sometimes called the shadow, sometimes called the pain body, mm-hmm. Sometimes called the ego. And I see a real contrast between old paradigm love and awakened love. And this book is about awakened love. It refers a bit to the old paradigm, you know, by way of contrast. But it's really to kind of give a new language for what awakened love can feel like and look like and sound like. So many of the poems that we hear in popular culture, which we really hear through music. I mean, popular music really is poetry set to music. And when you listen to it, oftentimes you will hear in the really juicy stuff, the stuff that touches your heart and you may not know why, mm-hmm. But it does. I would say that most often those really strong universal songs that touch us show love that is for the beloved with a little b and the beloved with a big B, much like Rumi did.
A little bit more about that, Panta.
Well, the love song to the beloved, speaking, you know, how your life has changed me, how I feel when I'm with you, how wonderful my life is having been touched by you. Speaking these words, one could be speaking to the beloved with a little b, the person with whom we're in relationship. And it can also be to that energy which we find it convenient to call God. And that would be what I call new paradigm awakened love. And old paradigm love and love songs, though many of them sound beautiful and can be poignant, because they speak to real human emotion, and sometimes real human emotion is raw and strong, and it's potent, but it's needy. It's coming from that place of longing and loss and obsession.
Yeah,
and you know, I'm looking for someone to complete me. You're that person. You're my everything. You know, there's a wonderful Michael Bublé song, which I totally love, which is, I don't know the exact title, but it may be You're My Everything or something close to it. And that is a feeling that I think people really have, but you know, kind of watch out for that.
yeah. Absolutely.
Because you don't want to make someone your source. Only your source is your source. And your source doesn't live only in the other. It lives everywhere and in you, too. And I think that old, needy kind of love, once, if we're coming from that perspective of trying to fill the hungry, thirsty, empty hole never can be filled.
Right.
You know,
right.
And when we don't have a good relationship with our inner mate or our inner beloved, which, again, there's overlap, but it's not exactly the same, and maybe we could come back to that idea in a moment. When we're coming from that needy place, there may be an initial high when we're infatuated with someone, and even into a marriage for a while, you know. And I think that in our culture, real relationships like that get a bad rap. They don't have to be that way. They don't have to lose their importance to us and their joy for us in the first 6 months or right after the honeymoon, the way that our culture portrays it. It's only when we came into the relationship thinking that, well, it's not really so much thinking as wishing, and unconsciously so, that the other will fill that for us. And I think I've personally seen and experienced the phenomenon of naming no names, of course, when someone who really just doesn't have that inner place of strength and wants to reach out to get it from another person, and acquire it. It just doesn't work. It doesn't work because it doesn't happen like that. We have to go through our own arc.
I think our culture really does a disservice to us to present a romantic model. Not that there's anything wrong with romance as an archetype, as an idea of something that you pull out and that you warm toward, this idea of noticing the specialness in someone. But the idea that, you know, it's the other person's job to do that for us and us to do that for them in this way that it's so searching and so needy. And it's reinforced in so many songs and
it
so
is.
Many women's magazines. And it seems to be the model that we all search for. And it's such a dysfunctional model. It just doesn't work. It doesn't work in the first stages of relationship, and it certainly doesn't work in the second stage of relationship.
No, because what happens is when someone, you know, who's thinking that, who's really looking at the other in sort of an addictive manner, like as if they are, you know, the drink or the drug or the whatever it is, you know, substance they're trying to acquire peace through, and they discover that peace cannot be acquired through that avenue, mm-hmm. then they become angry and disappointed.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? It's a kind of catch-22 because you can't acquire it like that. And
right.
if you keep on trying to do that, it's never satisfying.
Right. I think that's why so many people have serial marriages, because they seek out that beginning stage of love, that excitement and engulfment. And so if they can't find it with their partner, they go and they get in another marriage because they project onto the partner that expectation that they'll be like their total solace and sucker and all of that, which is a sucker, not sucker, but, you know.
Yeah, I think marriages and just relationships in general,
yeah.
you know, this sort of what the 12 steps would call love and sex addiction. I think sometimes serial marriage gets sometimes a bad rep. It's not always that. It can be just a matter, I mean, if we live a long time and we're romantically active and we're dedicated to our growth, we're not going to settle, and we're not going to stand for the status quo if the status quo gets out of resonance. You know, so if one person is on a trajectory of intense soul growth and personal growth, and the mate is not, then serial marriages, you know, and I'm not talking about 20, but can actually be, I think, healthier than sticking with. That's another thing I think our culture overvalues. I think our culture overvalues the notion of that it's better to have one marriage that lasts 60 years than three that last 20, because the three that last 20 may represent a huge lot of soul growth and much juicy happiness, really, where the one that lasts 60 may represent that too, or it may be like sticking in a job that you hate because you're too, I don't know, afraid or settled in to do something that's more joyous.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that when I was talking about serial marriages, I'm talking about people who get out of relationships again and again and again and again and again.
Right back in without taking any time to do
soul
searching and get the benefit out of what they learned.
Yes, but I do agree with you that at certain stages in life, we need different things and we grow in different ways, and sometimes we can't grow together with the same person anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's more authentic and more beneficial sometimes for those people to dissolve their relationships, for sure. For sure,
mm-hmm.
and to recognize that they're at a stalemate or they're growing in different directions or that sort of thing. Absolutely, absolutely. But I think that if you were talking earlier about this idea of the beloved with a big B,
mm-hmm.
I think that if we've internalized that idea of a beloved with a big B and a source inside ourselves, then if we're going through that experience in our lives, it doesn't have to be as catastrophic for us because we've internalized this idea of source inside, and we know we'll be safe and protected and okay, as opposed to relying so much on this idea of, you know, this cultural idea that a relationship is breaking up and, you know, this traditional kind of model where that's just absolutely a horrible thing.
I completely agree. And I think, you know, there are two aspects, you know, to, as I was referring earlier, as I referenced earlier, that the beloved with the big B and the inner mate are overlapping and slightly different shadings of the idea. And I think that we're not only okayer, if you will, in between relationships, but better in the actual relationship when we have those things going for us, because it doesn't put undue stress on the relationship, and the relationship is more of a, not only a cup half full, but a continually replenishing cup that can flow easily from friendship into romantic relationship. And also, if it doesn't, if it's not really right for a long-term romantic relationship, it can flow back into friendship very easily and sweetly when that love is really awakened and when one has a good relationship with the inner mate and the inner beloved. And I think that the two shadings of difference between those two archetypes that I'm talking about, when we have those internalized, we have safety needs met.
Yes.
And we have delight needs met. By safety needs, I mean we have the ability to support ourselves. We're not looking for the other person to rescue us or save us. We know that we can be fine in the relationship or out of the relationship. And so that, whether we're single or whether we're actually actively in a relationship, that makes a lot of difference. It takes a lot of the stress and strain out of it right there. And the delight piece, which I would call the inner mate, the inner beloved, just sort of backtracking a little bit to expand that idea, it would be that idea of source, you know, source of my good, source of the feeling of connection that we have, that our good is constantly flowing to us all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't, the strategy of how that happens and the avenues by which it comes can be very fluid. If it's not this, it's that. I'm you know, it's much more relaxing. And so it takes, if that goes out or is not present in a love relationship, it's just going to be more successful. And the other one, the inner mate, I think if we find ourselves delightful, if we enjoy our own company, if we do the things for ourselves that we enjoy when our mate does for us, but we don't not do those things and then resent that we don't have access to it. We have access to it. And if we find delight in ourselves, if we play music that we like, if we take ourselves out to dinner, if we just simply enjoy the sensuality of life and, you know, moving through space, and we feel the air caress us as we walk. You know, we feel our bodies move and all the muscles ripple and as we just even walk anywhere.
Yeah.
I think that the feeling of in-loveness that people look for in the early stages of relationship especially, can extend longer in real relationship, can extend really indefinitely in real relationship, and can also be present in the quote-unquote real relationship that you have with yourself. I mean, basically, if you just live in that state of in-loveness, you know, where you're feeling that connection. And the first two lessons in Ananda Marga Yoga, I started my career as a guided imagery facilitator, teaching meditation. And the first two lessons in that system of mind mastery and personal growth, spiritual growth, the first one is the mantra basically says, I am that. I am that. I am. So that's the relationship with the beloved with a big B.
Yeah.
And the second one is, the second Sanskrit mantra basically translates to, and so is everything else.
Mm-hmm.
So I am that is our connection with Source. And so is everything else is our connection with ourselves and the beloved with a smaller B. So that we see in him or her the beauty of the whole universe.
Mm-hmm.
And we also see it everywhere else we look, and we see it within ourselves. So, we can feel the delight in that person. And we can also remember when things get a little dicey, which they sometimes do in life. We can remember that that person is an expression of the divine, and so are we, and stay on the high road in discussions.
Yeah, yeah. I think, too, that often our relationship, for some people, in the beginning stages of relationship, our relationship is held in the wound. So we project onto each other what it is we lack in ourselves, and
mm-hmm.
we create this notion that the person has the perfect skills that we lack on an unconscious level, of course. And then that slow projection over time wears off, and we're actually seeing the person for who they are. We're actually seeing them clearly. And I think that's the time when it is sometimes more difficult for people to commit to relationships, but it's also the time that is so rich if someone is willing to withdraw the projection and see the other person clearly and take responsibility for who they are. The relationship can deepen through communication and connection that's more in the imagination sometimes than it even is in reality, so that we hold this intention for the other person to respond in a loving way. And if we both hold that intention, then that
yes.
can work.
Yes, I completely agree with that. And I think that, you know, earlier in life, there is a kind of learning curve to
yes.
relationship. Actually, I see some younger people I know with a faster learning curve. Maybe there's a collective unconscious that, you know, factor going on, that some of this, the knowledge that our generation, or I think I'm probably a little older than you, that my generation and previous ones, you know, every generation learns something, and who knows if that doesn't just sort of pass through by osmosis. Mm-hmm. But with you know, sort of my own folks my own age, women my own age in particular, I think that there's been a learning curve in terms of the nature of relationship, so that, you know, where in our, say, in our 30s, that sort of Harville Hendrix imago thing,
mm-hmm.
where you you know, you do that work of doing, really in a way, doing your spiritual growth work through noticing the places where you bump up against, and you really do stay in the high place and dialogue and all of that. And it's a lot of work, and it's a lot of, there's a lot of beauty in it, and it's very rewarding. And at the same time, by the time you get to be, you know, 60-ish, as I am, you kind of done that, you know, or at least done the big chunks of it. And so so in relationship, you don't really need that, and you're not looking for it either. It's pretty much about the fun.
That's pretty much what?
About the fun.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's awesome. That's a
you
wonderful
know, but
place.
When things do occur, I do think, you know, one of the, and this is going back to what you were just saying, really, I think that staying conscious is the ticket. And I think that a lot of that has to do with taking responsibility for your own shadow.
Absolutely.
Like, what do you do when the pain body knocks on the door? When you're in relationship, do you let it in and to the parlor and, you know, feed it snacks? Or,
right.
You know, if I think we can be, I'm happy to say I've really had this experience. We can be in conversations where there's maybe some differences and feel our feelings about those, and at the same time stay very heart connected and very connected on the spiritual level and just sort of flow through it and, you know, be in your feelings but also be in your observer, which I think is the magic combination.
Yeah, I do too. And the more that we can observe, the more clear we get about where our shadow is and where our wounds are. Because we can notice what triggers those kinds of feelings and responses so that we can stay in our own. There's a wonderful song. I don't know if you're familiar with Dar Williams. She's a folk singer that's just a word wizard. And she has a song that says, "And I'll stay in my body and you'll stay in your own, because we know that we're born and we're dying alone." And out of context, you can't really tell what the metaphor is about, but it's about that stability and that holding that separate sense of who you are in relationship to another.
Yes. And, well, it reminds me of that the Gibran quote that is so often used in weddings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to keep some space between you.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Keep some
and
space.
And honor that. Yes.
Honor
and
the
also
space.
I think also don't expect your beloved with a little b to be there and be everything for you. There's certain relationships that you have with people that have a richness and a capacity and a love that maybe your partner can't provide, you know. And especially as you go through your relationship, I've noticed for myself that as I've aged, I've enjoyed just very, very clear friendships with women sometimes more than romantic parts of relationships. And I think that maybe is a developmental thing. You know, I think that maybe is a needing to bond with sisters and needing to have that pure connection that isn't sometimes... Mm-hmm. Much work, you know.
Yeah, I hear you, and I've been good with female girlfriend people in my life. You know, that's really important to me. Girlfriend time is super important and very nourishing. And I think that most women, at least the women that I know, we all do that, and we know how important it is, and we do it, and we take time for that, no matter how busy we are. I mean, I'm like, this week is crazy busy for me, and yet I scheduled an afternoon on Friday with a friend, and we're going to have a playtime. And to me, it's just part of, you know, it's part of how to live, how to nourish yourself.
Exactly.
For me, the new experience has been to make friends with men, and have friendships, really wonderful friendships with men that I won't say are purely platonic, because they're not without some polarity, but they're not being acted on.
Yes.
At least not right now. You know, they were, you know, people that I dated, and it just wasn't. I'm an INFP, which means I'm a mater.
Right.
I really just don't. This isn't a value thing. It's like it's just how I'm. You know, some people are wired this way, and some are wired that. And so, you know, it's just, you know, INFPs, I'm sure you know, are all about dedication. And, you know, that's just how we are. So if it's not going to be, you know, if it's not some going sort of on track for at least possible long-term relationship, I just sort of like, I just lose interest in terms of the romantic part of it. But you know, if the person was someone I was friends with to begin with, why not stay friends?
Right, exactly. Well, and I think that breaks out of the paradigm of romantic love. You know, this idea that, you know, if it's not going to work romantically, you don't invest any time in the person anymore.
Yeah.
And if it's going to work romantically, you invest every day and every waking minute with the person, which I think is a destructive model
so
in and of
itself. It's so black and white. It's like, love me and be my all, or I don't want anything to do with you.
Exactly.
Which really means I don't like you. I just need you, and I'm attracted to you sexually.
Right, exactly.
You know, and the new paradigm being, you know, if it's not a good fit for a marriage-like relationship, why not be friends? I like you. I'm delighted to know you. And whatever form our love may take, including friendship, is fine with me.
Yes.
And of value to me.
Yes, yes. And I think that has to do with, I guess, holding your feelings sometimes. Because I know when I was much younger, if I had a romantic attraction to someone, I would just be so full of overwhelming feeling that it wasn't possible. But I think with this observing piece, I'm giving you a little too much away, but I think with this observing piece, you're able to watch your feelings subside or level out, or you're able to channel them in a different direction. And
you have
more fluidity and more choice.
You do.
I think
you have more mind mastery too. I mean,
absolutely.
That the book, you know, you were mentioning the Abundance Triggers book, and that's really what that's about. It's about how to shift your state and take some responsibility for shifting your attention from one thing into another.
Yes.
And, you know, primarily what that means for most of the book and the main thrust of it is from not feeling good to feeling good. But sometimes it can be from feeling, you know, feeling an emotion that's quite pleasant, but, you know, it may be just not appropriate to be steeping yourself in it all the time.
Yes, right.
You know, there are other aspects of life.
Exactly.
And I think, you know, archetype-wise, for speaking for women, you know, or maybe just speaking for myself, I don't know. But I think that finding a relationship with an inner mate, you know, for archetype-wise for women, is finding a relationship with the inner masculine. And, you know, so what that means is that you have some responsibility to set some boundaries for your your thoughts, your emotions, your activities, how much time you want to spend on this or that thing.
Yeah.
And you have some, you take responsibility for creating balance and functionality in your life. And you know, if you're an adult person, then it just doesn't make sense to spend all your day scribbling little hearts on the edges of papers, unless you're illustrating a book, which is my next ask. I really do need to scribble hearts on pieces of paper, but I don't do it all the time, like I did maybe in the eighth grade.
Well, I think, too, sometimes people don't have good information about how to move through the stages of relationship. Like, I was just with someone the other day who had just met someone and was waiting for them to call and was staying by the phone and didn't want to leave the phone. And I don't think I'm ever going to do that. I mean, I'm in a relationship now, but I don't think I will ever do that again in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Because when she said that to me, I thought that triggers that feeling of, you know, fight or flight, you know.
It does.
I would never put myself
It's so constricted. It's so, you're in the longing.
Yes.
You know? You're in the not have, and you're also in the making the other into your source. You know, far better to put on music that you like, dance around, clean your house, have fun, do something productive, or take yourself out on a date.
Yes,
and you know, your voicemail will take the message when he calls.
Exactly. And if it's meant to be, it'll be. They're going to meet you. They're going to contact you again because they really want to be around you. You know what I mean?
Right.
I think it's such a faulty model. It's just such... And it's one that's encouraged in the culture. So,
it's very much encouraged in the culture.
It just struck me so strongly when I heard it the other day, and I thought, and I remember doing it when I was younger, thinking, oh my gosh, I can't miss their call, and I would never do it now. I would just like, whoa, you know?
Yeah.
It was a wake up call.
Well, that's back to that. Just reminds me of, you know, the popular culture songs, which so many of them are about longing before a relationship actually happens, or regret, really longing after it's over, longing for it to happen, longing for it to, you know, come back.
Longing for it to happen when the person is actively moving away. You know?
Yes. Like, oh, my
it's
God.
When you really dig your cousin, right? That's a bad model.
Yeah, and then there are the revenge songs.
I know.
There's a particular group whose sound I absolutely love. I really like neo-soul. I like funk. I like jazz funk. I like everything where R&B dances with other genres. I like that. You know, and there's one extremely popular group that I won't mention the name of it, because I don't want to point a finger at a specific, you know, entity. But I will say this: I love the sound of this group's songs. Every single one of them just pleases the heck out of me and makes me want to get up and dance. But the lyrics are just plain awful.
Yeah.
So I try not to engage with the lyrics and just let the sound of it wash over me, you know. But I think there's a whole market. I think there's an untapped market for music that is as engaging as the old stuff, but has beauty in it and has soul beauty in it. There's, you know, there's some of it there. But we need more. And so what I'm doing with Love Poems, or what I did with Love Poems and what I'm doing with the next one, is I just want to model that. I want to put words for what it feels like to do it differently.
Yes, yes. And to be aware of doing it differently.
And to be aware of doing it differently, because when you do it differently and you're aware of doing it differently, you're really anchoring a whole new and different way of being, you know, and mm-hmm. and it's almost like you jump a groove and create a new one.
Mm-hmm.
And how lovely is that?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and it puts you into a different place, even on a quantum level, where you have a different way of responding to your own triggers, your own responses, so that your energy flows differently by making different choices like that.
Yeah. I think that the sense of recognition that people feel in the old paradigm and the sense of recognition they feel in the new, there's some overlap in that it's recognition.
Mm-hmm.
But the way that it plays out can be so very different. I mean, I think that when we, you know, sort of in the old paradigm love model, when we meet someone, sometimes there's this strong feeling of recognition,
mm-hmm.
as if we've known someone for a lifetime or more. And of course, you know, I think it is because we have. I think there's some kind of divine appointment. Though
mm-hmm.
when we first meet them, it may feel like, oh, this is my twin flame. This is my soulmate. And yeah, there is a kind of soulmate thing going on, but it's a learning. It's about learning. It's a karmic soulmate. You know,
mm-hmm.
we have this intense feeling of recognition, and later on, I think when that learning occurs, I think it's useful to feel gratitude to the person rather than the sort of resentment that people often do.
Yes, I agree. I agree. I think that is an opportunity for growth for both people when
mm-hmm.
that happens.
And I also think we can feel recognition when we meet someone sort of in a different place of our learning curve further along,
mm-hmm.
where that there still is that sense of I've known you before. There's a purposefulness to this connection, and it may or may not be a lifetime, you know, romantic relationship. But it can be a very heart opening.
Yes.
One. So there's still and where the people are conscious of that, you know, it's a real different phenomenon. So that you're not necessarily looking back on it at a later point and saying, yeah, that person was really important to me and I learned X, Y, and Z and isn't that wonderful? But you're actually in the sense of that even as it's occurring and the two of you even talk about it and just
yeah.
enjoy it.
Yeah.
And that's so lovely.
Yeah.
It's just great getting old. I love it.
Thank you for you saying that. I think that's another thing that's so missing in our culture is this mentoring and modeling for women and men at different stages, you know. And I actually was in this coffee shop the other day, and there were all these women in there who were knitting, and they were going to knitting conferences, and they were talking about their patterns, and they were just whooping it up. And
mm-hmm.
I thought, that's who I want to be when I get
mm-hmm.
older. That's a model that I can hang with.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, at my present age, my grandmother seems so old to me, you know, and
mm-hmm.
so, like, I don't know, so dried up, really.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel quite alive, thank you very much.
Wonderful.
And I date, and I have a love life, and I enjoy the world, and I enjoy all aspects of life. And it's just so different than what I anticipated as a younger person, what being 60-ish would feel like and how it would look.
Awesome, awesome. I think that intention setting is so important, you know, that living with intentionality, even on a body level, you know, that your body can't do or may not act the same way that it did when you were younger. But if you listen to it, you can gracefully understand what it's saying to you at mm-hmm. any stage in your life, you know?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Well, for me, the watershed moment about that was that I was diagnosed with cancer 5 years ago mm-hmm. and treated. And, you know, I think the needs of one's body do change, but there's always a need for rest.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That was something I never really did much of. And there's always a need for connecting with help.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something I never did much of either. I kind of had this lone cowgirl, macho cowgirl kind of deal going on.
Mm-hmm.
And a work ethic, which probably wasn't the healthiest. I think a work ethic is good, but, you know, there's a point of diminishing returns.
Yeah.
And so when that occurred in my life, it was, you know what, what wants to come out of my mouth is such a blessing, and I realize that may seem shocking or weird to people, and I don't as I say that, I don't mean to sound Pollyanna-ish or to take away the real feelings that people have of grief and shock and fear and all the things. I mean, I'm not saying I didn't feel those feelings, because I sure did, but looking back on it, it gave me a better understanding and respect for my body and how to take care of it,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so I think that's one reason that 60-ish is very different for me than it would have been had that experience not occurred. I mean, I think it youthened me, actually, because I do rest and I'm softer.
Yeah.
I'm just a softer person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. It's so important to listen at every stage, and it's so important to open to whatever our experiences are, you know, even if they're experiences that someone might judge to be ones we didn't want to have. There's still always an opportunity to learn and grow from having them and from opening instead of closing, you know?
Yeah, and you know, I think that certainly applies to the love and relationship situation, that every single relationship that we ever have of any significance, whether it's you know, a girlfriend, you know, a female friend in our life that's a you know, entirely platonic, or whether it's a romantic relationship, it's always going to grow us. There's always going to be something we learn and something
yeah.
of value, regardless of whether it's entirely pleasant or not.
Absolutely. And I think, too, you know, holding these boundaries in a softer way is so important. I just had a friend who I had a falling out with, and the younger me would have, like, you know, I don't know, tried to fix the situation
or tried to.
And I just am like, no, you know, she'll come back around when it's time, or she won't, and I
yeah.
love her. And that's okay. She needs
mm-hmm.
to go on her journey. I need to go on mine. And they don't cross over right now. You know?
Yeah.
<That's all.
laughs> Yep.
So.
You know what? That brings, that's beautiful. Because it also goes to a point that we haven't really brought in, which I think is important,
sure.
you know, in terms of the old paradigm versus awakened love. In the old paradigm, it's not only that we want our person to be a source for us, the source for us, but we may be tempted to be the source for them. And that's just as messed up. It's just as out of alignment with divine law, because we can't be that, and it's not appropriate. It's really ego when we try to fix somebody. You know what I mean? So you released the friend, knowing that either she would come back or not, and that it would be all right either way.
Yes. Yeah.
I think that's very beautiful.
Yeah, I do too. I'm pleased with that choice.
I had a similar situation with a friend some years ago,
mm-hmm.
and she was a very dear friend, and I just felt so sad that there just seemed to be an impasse. It just was really out of alignment, and I didn't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I did know that I didn't want to engage in the way that it seemed to be necessary to engage if we were going to be in friendship still. So I let it go, and I let it go in a way that honored it. And I actually made a little altar to her. I put her picture on the dining room table and lit a candle and just gave thanks for the friendship. And loved her. And you know what? It did come back. And we are very, very good friends today again.
Yeah.
And that was just really a delightful thing.
Yeah, I think that there's a wonderful book by David Rico called, I think it's called Loving as an Adult, and it's based on Buddhist principles, and it's based on the fight or flight, you know, whole configuration, the idea that some mm-hmm. people run away and some people engulf and enmesh mm-hmm. in relationship, and that mm-hmm. it's important to notice what your patterns are in relationship to your beloved with a big B. But the book is... Now I just forgot what I was going to say about it. Darn. It's a wonderful, wonderful book.
Well, we were talking about letting go and how that sometimes results in coming back.
Yes. It's about allowing, and he talks about the role that allowing needs to play in our lives. And that,
that's
allowing the other to be wherever they are and whatever they are in relationship to you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it personally, and I think that we're better at that if we grow up in a family where that is mirrored and modeled for us,
mm-hmm.
Because we've internalized that allowing, and I know that for myself, I have not internalized that allowing, so it's something that I work on, and I notice, and it ebbs and flows, of course.
Me too, and I think that idea of noticing your pattern, like being observational, I think that's really helpful. I think Harville Hendrick's material about that, I found that really helpful. I really enjoyed reading his books. And I think that sort of, he calls it, what does he call it, fuser or isolator? Same thing that you were talking about. And I know, I guess the isolator would be the runner away.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that that's me. You know, if things just aren't all lining up in every way that I wish they would, or I hope they would, my impulse is to just bag the whole thing right away.
Yeah.
And I'm aware that that's my pain body. That is my ego.
Yes.
And I don't act on it. You know, there's an amazing quote in The Course in Miracles about that, which I don't have mm-hmm. it in front of me, but it talks about how the ego pretends to be searching for love and looking for love, but really its actual commitment is to avoid love at all costs, because it thinks that love is dangerous. And so I think the diffusers and the isolators are both, you know, putting a monkey wrench in actual love. And so if you're observational and take responsibility for your shadow, you can leave doors open and create beautiful pathways easily for love to flow in whatever way it shows up, whether it's friendship or romantic or both, or it moves from back to forth.
Yes, I absolutely agree. And I think often setting intention for something to go in a different way when you're in that place where you're like, well, it's going to fall or it's going to topple or, you know, it's already in motion kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
That it's really, really powerful to imagine it doing something else, you know, something that you don't know anything about.
visualization.
Yeah.
We love this.
Powerful, powerful stuff.
Visualization RF.
Yes. Exactly. I know you do a lot of creative visualization in your practice, as do I. So that's wonderful. We just have about 4 more minutes, so I want to make sure that you're able to say whatever it is you want to say on the way out and to you know, plug your books and all your work and that sort of stuff.
Oh, well, that's sweet. Thanks. I think when I'm where the energy is for me right now that I'm most excited about is, Abundance Triggers, I'm going to always be excited about because it's just a manual to planet Earth. But the love poems books are very, very dear to me right now. And the newest release for me was Love Poems, and it came out on Easter Day, as a matter of fact.
Wonderful.
And people seem to enjoy it, and it's touching people's hearts. It's a great little gift book. It's a sweet little book that you can, you know, tuck into a gift for a bride or give to your sweetie at dinner or something like that. And there's some wedding readings, you know, really neat readings that could be incorporated into weddings. And the new one, Awaken Love, very much in the same vein of what we've been talking about. Both of these books have a lot of humor in them, and they're just sweet and fun and whimsical. And Awaken Love has even more, because I was conscious of it as I was writing it, has more, even more books and more poems in it that really are very, very appropriate for wedding readings. And I do, I officiate weddings, so I that's something that's in my mind to offer some things that are fresh, because as much as I love Cahill Gibran and I love Paco Bell's Canon and D and I love Cream Chicken, I don't want those things all the time. You know what I mean? And
yes.
I think people do enjoy things that are fresh and different sometimes.
Sure. Absolutely. Very cool. So you can find your books on Amazon, Kanta?
Yes, the books are on Amazon. There are actually many books on Amazon, CDs as well. And Love Poems is up there, and Awaken Love should be out in, I'd say, mid-autumn.
Great. Well, thanks so much for spending the hour with Inner Voice. It was a rich conversation, as it always is.
I know. Fun again. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Have a great evening. Take good care.
You too.
Well, I guess we're not going to have music for the way out. Thanks so much for listening to Inner Voice Intuitive Hour this evening. If you like the show, please follow it. Share your picture with us. And have a great evening. And whatever you do, go make magic. Feel magic. Magic, and notice magic, because that's really what we're here for. Have a great evening, everybody. Take good care. Bye now.